Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
All the way back to 2008. Ruination, the early years.
Welcome to Ruination, the early years. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
And we are joining you once again as we dive into the glorious, and I mean truly glorious, chaos of the Big Fatty Online Archives.
We really have. We've hit a crucial point this week, a real inflection point in the 2008 archive.
We have.
We're embarking on a deep dive into episodes 107 all the way through 111. So that covers the week of Monday, June 30th through Friday, July 4th.
For the July week.
Exactly. And this isn't just, you know, a typical week. This is the fulcrum. This is the pivot.
It absolutely is. I feel like our mission today is really to unpack this collision. It's like two massive forces in the Big Fatty universe are just heading right for each other.
Okay, what are they?
You've got the looming cross-country trip to San Francisco on one hand, and on the other, you have the resulting domestic chaos. And it's all fueled by this extreme self-focus and his explicit humor.
Right.
What we're seeing is the meticulous planner suddenly completely overwhelmed by the reality of just packing a bag and leaving his house.
That tension is.
Yeah.
That is the central thesis of BFO, especially in this era.
Yeah.
Big Fatty is, I mean, he is simultaneously a creature of intensely rigorous, almost military-grade planning.
Oh, for sure. Tracking sky miles, flight legs, his retirement date down to the day.
Exactly. And yet at the very same time, he is entirely defined by this momentary, biological, or domestic chaos.
He's the ultimate juxtaposition of order and ruination.
He is. And we are going to explore how he uses his daily show, that structure, to contain and, frankly, to license that chaos.
Yeah.
To give it permission to exist.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Let's start right at the beginning of the week. We're in section one, the fat ones, internal clock and external chaos. This is coming from episodes 107 and 109.
So the week starts with a kind of a surprising moment of structural reflection. It's in episode 107, June 30th.
Right.
And Big Fatty just stops and acknowledges that this is the precise halfway mark of 2008.
It's an almost universal moment, isn't it? That calendar anxiety we all feel. And he grounds it immediately.
How does he do that?
He anchors it using this classic, this almost sentimental reference to his mother, the Hatarina.
Ah, of course.
And her famous saying, "Where has the time gone?" You know, he's reaching for this touchstone of shared domestic wisdom.
Right before the chaos takes over.
Exactly. It's this quick moment of sincerity. It's like a breath before he just dives headfirst into the deeply, deeply personal.
That grounding is so crucial. I mean, it allows the audience to relate to him on this really foundational level. We all feel the passage of time.
We do.
And then, you know, before you can even get comfortable, he immediately pivots to the details of his own profoundly specific physical discomfort.
And this is where we have to, I think, for the sake of clarity for anyone listening, we have to establish the official BFO lexicon for bodily functions.
We do. It's non-negotiable.
Because he gets very candid about his current state. He has this very real fear of needing to pause the show due to, let's just call it an imminent biological necessity.
Exactly. So for anyone just joining us, you have to understand the recurring terminology. It's TT and boom, boom.
Simple as that.
TT is the BFO shorthand for urination. And boom, boom is the term for defecation, or as he would put it, taking a dump.
It's really remarkable how he externalizes these functions. He gives them these unique, almost childlike labels.
That's a whole thing. Why do you think he does that? The infantilized language.
I think it plays directly into his brand.
Yeah.
By naming these basic, you know, adult biological processes with these cutesy or childish terms, he's inviting the listener past the usual boundary of politeness.
He's
basically saying, we're so intimate, we're so close that we have our own private language for going to the bathroom.
It's a performative intimacy marker.
100%.
That's a strong point. It lowers the barrier of entry into the subject matter.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it somehow heightens the shocking nature of the detail. It makes it even more jarring.
It does. So what was the immediate, specific, and very localized cause of all this physical distress this week?
The ultimate BFO villain.
It's a taco salad.
The taco salad. He reports in both episode 107 and episode 109 that he had a taco salad for supper the night before.
And it made him, and this is a quote, a little gassy.
A little gassy. The taco salad is single-handedly responsible for threatening the entire structural integrity of Big Fatty Online.
It's incredible. And this food-related distress, it doesn't just stop at mere flatulence.
Oh, no.
This physical reality leads him directly to this profound moment of vulgar, self-reflective commentary that... just, it defines his whole high-low style.
You're talking about the sewage metaphor.
The sewage metaphor from episode 107. This is where it gets really interesting. Unpack the connection he makes between the Sissy and Boom conversation and the George W. Bush sewage treatment plant.
Okay, so he draws this direct line. He's talking about his own body. And then he just states that this facility, this sewage plant named after the president, is a national monument so aptly named.
And the mechanism here is just, it's brilliant in its vulgarity.
It really is.
He takes his own immediate, embarrassing, and let's be honest, crude physical reality, the consequence of eating a taco salad.
Yeah.
And he connects it directly to the highest political office in the country.
It's not just a joke, is it? It's almost a piece of political theory that's been filtered through his gastrointestinal tract.
That's the perfect way to put it. He's asserting that all human endeavors, you know, whether it's running the country or running a body, ultimately end up in the same place.
The sewage plant.
The sewage plant. It's this great leveling mechanism that says your entire political structure is just as messy and chaotic as my body is after a taco salad.
This is how he weaponizes the intimate details of his life.
Mm-hmm.
He uses them to critique the external world.
Yeah.
And it asserts his authenticity, right?
Yeah.
Because he's willing to share the grossest parts of himself.
Absolutely.
The metaphor suggests this baseline of universal ruination. Nothing is sacred, not even the president's legacy. Because
yeah.
In the end, it's all just waste waiting for treatment.
It's an incredibly potent, if crude, piece of commentary.
It really is.
So moving on from tracking his own internal discomfort, Big Fatty's focus just immediately swings outward. And we get to section 2, podcast policing and intellectual superiority.
Which is highlighted primarily in episode 108.
This is Big Fatty as the self-appointed guardian of the network.
I find this dynamic endlessly fascinating.
Yeah.
I really do. Here's one of the most unconventional, you know, unscripted, explicit podcasters out there.
The mayest.
And he suddenly turns into this IP litigation expert. He's so territorial, and he's drawing these really hard boundaries.
And his critique is aimed at other unnamed podcasters. He accuses them of stealing intellectual property.
And the specific property being stolen, you have to hear this to believe it.
It's the phrase, right, right, right.
Just those three words.
Those three words in a row. He claims that numerous other hosts are adopting this verbal tech, and he asserts, totally seriously, that it is a clear and direct trademark of the QCA connection Superb and Michael.
So they own the use of three identical, very common English words when used in a sequence.
Exactly. And the threat is real, or at least it's performatively real. He warns that there may be serious litigation if these thieving podcasters don't watch out.
It's such an incredibly high-stakes threat over an extremely low-stakes offense.
It is.
We have to analyze this psychologically.
Yeah.
I mean, why is this banality so important to him?
I think Big Fatty's content is defined by its uniqueness. You know, its explicit nature, the deep personal lore, its chaotic flow.
Right.
And if other podcasters are adopting the verbal mannerisms of his inner circle, his friends, it signals homogenization. It's a threat.
Okay, I see. So he needs structural differentiation to justify the existence of his own unfiltered chaotic show. The litigation threat isn't about money.
No.
It's a defense mechanism for his unique brand integrity.
That's spot on. He's basically saying, if you can't even be original in your filler words, what on earth makes you think you can handle high-level commentary?
And that connects directly to his deeper critique, doesn't it? His critique of stupid podcasters.
It does. He dedicates serious airtime to expressing his intense frustration with these unnamed hosts. He labels them stupid idiots and people who clearly lack education.
And the core complaint is about intellectual honesty.
Yes.
He says, these hosts talk as if they're knowledgeable about politics and world events, but they are just. They're showing their ignorance.
He mentions listening to three entirely different podcasts, and he's very specific. He clarifies they are not in the gay realm.
Right.
And he finds himself literally shouting at his iPod, just calling the hosts idiots.
And the ultimate insult, I think, is when he says they don't even know they're stupid.
It's savage, a truly savage piece of BFO analysis. He's setting this incredibly high bar for content integrity, even while he's in the middle of discussing his taco salad gas.
The contrast is everything.
It is, and this sets up Big Fatty's own guiding principle. You shouldn't talk about things that you don't know about.
That defines the intellectual boundaries of BFO.
It does. And he immediately connects this principle back to his own content strategy with, you know, a great deal of humor.
He predicts, humorously, that if he's strictly adhered to this rule, only speaking on subjects where he is a certified expert, his entire show would be drastically reduced.
Just boiled down to its essence. And what would he cover? Three specific things.
Fiber.
Chatting himself.
And memory lane music.
And that's it. Those three subjects become the pillars of his authenticity strategy.
He's acknowledging his own limitations, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's positioning himself as the only honest expert in the room.
Yes.
Because he only claims expertise in his own body, his own thoughts, and his own very specific pop culture memory.
It's brilliant. It really is.
It allows him to pivot so seamlessly from that kind of self-reflection to pure entertainment, which brings us perfectly to section three, community lore and explicit terminology.
This is where we see Big Fatty managing the unique, intimate, and sometimes very strange language of his devoted community.
And this section kicks off with a really fascinating lexicon update. It's in episode 107.
It's regarding a highly explicit sexual term that was used by British John in a previous show.
Yes, the update concerns a correction that was sent in via an e-letter. The term had been previously referred to as face slapping.
Right. But Big Fatty, ever the stickler for accuracy in these matters, ensures the BFO lexicon is correct. The correct term is turkey slapping.
And of course, he provides the explicit definition, cementing it right into the BFO canon.
He does. Turkey slapping is where one slaps their gobbler, the neck waddle in someone's face. Incredibly specific, incredibly graphic sexual slang.
And the context is provided immediately. He ties this new piece of lore directly to contemporary pop culture.
He states this was all related to Jamie Brisby doing some turkey slapping while in the Big Brother house.
See, he's not just sharing slang for the shot value. He's applying it. He's making it relevant to the pop culture they're all consuming together.
And he uses this moment to provide a community call to action. He plugs the current Australian Big Brother season.
And he promises listeners that there is deliciousness to be found in the house right now.
The feedback loop is just perfect and complete. You get the explicit lexicon, you get the community correction, you get celebrity gossip, and then a viewing recommendation for his audience. It's a full service operation.
Moving to Pipples 109, we see him managing listener interaction while this San Francisco trip is, you know, it's imminent. It's right there.
He mentions that he's being efficient with his content. He's playing stockpiled voice letters because, and I quote, he doesn't feel like talking that day.
Which just shows how the structure is strong enough to allow for host exhaustion. The show must go on, even if he doesn't feel like talking.
And one specific voice letter comes from a listener named Ryan, which leads to this direct and immediate clarification from Big Fatty regarding his boundaries for the upcoming trip.
It's a moment of intentional, very suggestive tension.
Yes. Ryan's message led Big Fatty to issue this unequivocal public response, defining the terms of engagement.
And the response is,
Ryan is nor going to be putting a collar on Big Fatty. Nor. It's a clear boundary setting, but the boundary is set around a topic collars and kink that heavily informs the entire vibe of this trip.
Right. He uses the no to actually confirm the context of the trip.
Exactly. He states that while he won't be wearing a collar, he will see others wearing collars at the Powerhouse, which is a known establishment, and other venues when he's out in San Francisco.
So he's controlling the narrative. He's saying, I'm going to the scene, I know the scene, but my role is observer, not participant, at least in this specific capacity.
It's a strategic information release. It's designed to tease the audience and satisfy them at the exact same time.
And finally, in this section, we see the absolute logistical chaos of the trip collide with fan dedication in episode 111. I'm talking about the tzatziki dip gift.
Oh, this is a classic. This follows a previous mention of him receiving a mysterious package.
And the sender is identified. It's Michael in Stuttgart.
Michael from Germany, who is, you know, he's a known entity in the BFO ecosystem. He's the dedicated international correspondent and a sender of extravagant, often challenging gifts.
And the gift itself is tzatziki cucumber dip, a highly perishable dairy product.
Sent via FedEx.
From Germany. Michael knows Big Fatty is leaving, yet he ships a perishable food item across an ocean demanding immediate logistical attention.
It's brilliant fan engagement. It's not just a gift, it's a challenge. It turns the dip into a time-sensitive bomb.
It does. And Big Fatty has to address the dip logistics on air. He confirms he will not be eating the F-bucket of dip before getting on the plane.
A wise decision.
He expects he'll be fine upon his return in 2 days. He's optimistic.
But he provides the brutal final assessment of the situation, just in case.
Which is, if it's molded when he gets back, he will throw it away.
This is Big Fatty, the consumer, the anti-waste champion, just making peace with the potential ruin of this thoughtful gift because of the sheer chaos of his travel schedule.
The dip has become a piece of serialized content. Its fate is literally hanging in the balance while he's off in California.
It's truly amazing. He turns a simple fan gift into this entire multi-episode logistical saga. It just shows the intimacy of the show, you know? The audience is now tracking the shelf life of his condiments.
It's incredible.
Before we fully dive into the travel details, we do have to take a quick detour.
It's time.
It's time for Ruined Ruination, our segment for correcting errors that we've discovered in the archive.
And this segment, even though it can be brief in execution, is so vital to the BFO brand.
Why do you say that?
Because Big Fatty is the master of self-correction. And that's a massive contrast to those stupid podcasters he was just talking about, the ones who refuse to admit error.
That's a great point. So in episode 111, Big Fatty insists that he made a mistake on yesterday's show.
He does. He claims he called the Pixar movie WALL-E, Largy.
And we can confirm the correct title is, of course, WALL-E.
Yeah.
But let's analyze the value of this correction loop for a second.
Okay.
Big Fatty is operating in real time, completely unscripted. So minor verbal slips, they're inevitable, they're going to happen.
Yeah.
So by immediately catching and correcting this mistake, which is a very low stakes error, he reinforces his commitment to authenticity.
He's proving that he is editing himself, but he's only editing to correct basic facts. He's not sanitizing his explicit life details.
It's an implicit contrast, right? He'll gladly admit he misspoke a movie title.
But he won't hesitate for a second to share the details of his taco salad guess.
That self-aware error reporting is just part of the BFO aesthetic. Admitting the mistake is more important than achieving initial perfection.
Absolutely. It keeps the listener feeling like they're included in the editorial process. They're part of it.
Okay, so now let's move into section 5. Countdown to California. The structure of Big Fatty's life just so often hinges on these long-term, motivating countdowns.
And this week provides a major milestone. In episode 110, which was recorded on Thursday, July 3rd, he notes that he has exactly 69 days until he can retire from the coal mine.
69 days. And the number 69, of course, gives the milestone a playful, suggestive edge.
It has to.
It's a classic piece of BFO humor that injects innuendo into even the most mundane data point you could imagine, like retirement planning.
But let's put this into context for a minute. We're listening to this in 2008.
Right.
While he is counting down the days, this goal was still nearly a decade away. Big Fatty eventually retired in June of 2018.
Wow.
So the countdown isn't really about imminent freedom. It's about maintaining a long-term psychological goal that provides structure and, you know, motivation for enduring the daily grind at the coal mine.
That's essential. The countdown provides the psychological framework. It's the light at the end of a very, very long tunnel.
It is.
But while that long-term planning is so meticulous, the short-term travel logistics are, of course, pure performed chaos.
As detailed in episode 111.
Yes. Big Fatty records this on Thursday evening and announces, with only hours to go until his flight, that he has not packed the first thing.
He is totally unprepared for his 6 a.m. pickup the next morning.
See, this is where I have to push back a little. Is he truly chaotic, or does he just enjoy the performance of last-minute chaos?
That's an interesting question.
He knows Miss Kitty is picking him up at 6 a.m. The problem is no packing done, but the solution is clear. He has all night. He uses the deadline of the pickup time to justify his extreme procrastination.
Which is a form of self-sabotage.
That he then uses for content.
That's a great point. He controls the chaos. He has to externalize the stress to the audience. He needs the drama of that deadline to actually motivate him to do the thing.
Exactly. But the actual logistics of the flight itself, once he gets going, are flawless.
Oh, yeah. He checked in online, he printed his boarding passes, he details the entire route. Charleston, South Carolina to Atlanta, Georgia.
And then the long haul from Atlanta to San Francisco.
And this is where his thrift really meets his luxury.
He's not flying coach.
No way. He's flying first class using Good Sky Miles.
it's an earned reward. It's not just a trip. It's a demonstration of his consumer savvy and his sort of network status.
And he's already planned his in-flight dining. He's anticipating a good breakfast on the long Atlanta to SFO leg, plus the benefit of personal entertainment. He's got it all mapped out.
And crucially, he details the final weight constraints. He emphasizes that his luggage will be under 50 pounds.
Which leads to that highly specific, boundary-pushing piece of information.
He confirms he will not be taking the sling with him.
The sling detail. Why is it there? I mean, let's focus on its inclusion. It's completely unnecessary logistical data.
I think it serves two vital functions. First, it's an intimacy marker. It reassures his core audience that they know the full context of his life, even down to his specialized gear.
Okay.
And second, it's a narrative boundary. He's saying, I am sharing my sexual life with you, but I am controlling the information. The purpose of this trip is being partially defined by the items I choose not to bring.
It's a perfect example of how BFO builds trust.
Mm.
He shares these explicit details only to then reinforce his control over the overall narrative.
He gives you the sling detail, but he doesn't tell you the details of the actual weekend. No. Not yet.
Not yet.
So, moving from logistics to leisure, let's jump into section 6, pop culture and movie review deep dive. Even with that packing clock ticking down, Big Fatty maintains his commitment to highly detailed cinematic and culinary reporting.
Episode 111 contains a masterclass in this specific genre, the Wally experience.
He saw the movie with his longtime friend Larry Cly
at the Sin Bar Theater.
And the primary focus of the entire review wasn't the plot or the animation or the themes of environmental collapse.
It was the menu. It was all about the food.
The amount of food ordered was, I think he said, unbelievable. It was staggering. He meticulously details his order. Chicken fingers, which he specified.
Right. They were actually huge chicken breast fillets.
Yes. Served with good honey mustard dipping sauce and fries.
That specific detail, that the chicken fingers were actually fillets.
Yeah.
That shows the BFO commitment to accuracy and to value. He's the food critic of the people.
He is.
And the popcorn. The popcorn deserves its own extended analysis. He emphasizes that he must have popcorn.
And they brought him a mixing bowl full of it.
A mixing bowl of popcorn.
That's not a snack. That is a structural component of the movie viewing experience.
We're talking about an amount of food that arguably dwarfs the plot of the movie itself. That level of consumption is just staggering, and he reports it with such pride.
And the quality detail is vital. He notes it was delicious and it had real butter on it.
That is a core consumer distinction for Big Fatty. He appreciates the genuine, high-quality ingredient. He's always contrasting real butter with the artificial topping you get at most mainstream theaters.
Always. And Larry Cly's order was equally specific. A hamburger, fries, and fried pickles.
And they both drank ginger ale. Big Fatty clarifies that Larry Cly didn't want to drink gin during a movie.
Every single element of the outing is noted and cataloged. It makes the shared experience feel incredibly intimate for you, the listener.
The food review is this perfect micro-narrative of consumer pleasure and accuracy. And from the movie theater, he moves to the airplane. His cultural critique continues with the in-flight entertainment critique.
He inventories all the options available to him in first class.
The main feature is the movie 21, which he says sounded sort of an okay movie.
He then lists the other options: Smart People, Fool's Gold, and Dr. Seuss's Horton Hears a Who.
And he's a highly specific, very self-referential reason for potentially watching the Dr. Seuss movie.
He's linking the external pop culture right back to his internal lore.
Exactly. He knows he might watch it because the title says Hook.
Which is, of course, a direct nod to Hortensia, his longtime housekeeper. He's linking mainstream children's entertainment directly to his private domestic universe. It's always about the personal connection.
Always. But the most self-referential pick of all is the movie Run, Fat Boy, Run.
Oh, this is a great moment. He reads the full synopsis about Simon Pegg entering a marathon to win back his ex-wife.
It's a moment of profound meta-commentary.
It really is. He is Big Fatty, and he is about to run a marathon of travel and chaos. The synopsis is this unconscious mirroring of his own persona, the fat one running a digital and physical marathon of his own life.
He also inventories the 2008 TV on-demand options, providing this detailed snapshot of cable content at the time.
The Closer, Saving Grace, The Billingvall Show, my boys.
And VH1 music videos. He's providing a complete cultural itinerary for his flight to San Francisco, guaranteeing that his audience is aware of every possible entertainment decision he might make over the next 12 hours.
And finally, his commentary on the baby borrowers in episode 111 is just pure, unfiltered BFO reality TV analysis. It's focused entirely on relationship dysfunction.
His focus is laser sharp on the personal drama of one contestant.
He states that the black girl with the kind of hot little Latino boyfriend needs to get herself together because she is not a happy camper.
His analysis is so savage and immediate, he notes the boyfriend needs to figure out the situation and get rid of her real quick.
It's concise, it's explicit, and it's focused entirely on relationship conflict, which is just a recurring theme in all of his pop culture commentary.
And he wraps up the whole pop culture section with a crucial network alert. He's making sure his audience is structurally prepared for the next wave of chaos.
Which is?
The launch of Big Brother 10 is Sunday, July 13th. His commitment to reality TV is just as rigorous as his commitment to his own content schedule.
Absolutely. Okay, moving on to Section 7, the new look, lore, and law enforcement excuses. The preparations for San Francisco weren't just about packing luggage and dip.
No, they were aesthetic, and they required a public debut.
In episode 111, Big Fatty unveils his California look on the BFO website. This is him controlling his self-image ahead of a major public appearance in a significant new city.
And he details the specifics meticulously. He's ensuring listeners know exactly what to look for.
The flat top, the shaved sides of the head, the chin strap beard.
And the specific arrangement that he calls the landing stuff. It leaves nothing to the imagination.
And he issues a firm classic BFO ultimatum regarding this aesthetic choice.
He states he's not changing it if listeners don't like it.
So they might as well like it.
It's brilliant. He validates his personal choice while inviting comment, but also setting boundaries against immediate criticism.
Of course, the community instantly engages with this new look. The inevitable first commenter was
Michael from Stuttgart.
Of course. Linking the tzatziki dip sender directly back to the new aesthetic debut.
Which leads to the infamous Kim Beaver's ruination transformation.
Mm.
Kim Beaver, who's a key artistic figure in the community, immediately picked up Big Fatty's picture and edited it.
Adding goat horns, ears, and a wreath of grapes, plus some foreign language text.
It's fan artist prophecy.
It really is. The implication of this transformation, as Big Fatty interprets it, is close to the truth.
Because he notes that he may be a little horny while he's in San Francisco.
He embraces the sexual explicit fan art as a prediction of his travel behavior. He just folds the community's interpretation right into his own narrative.
The whole exchange is just. It's a perfect piece of community-generated lore that fuels the BFO narrative.
It's a dialogue. The host presents a factual update, and the community immediately provides the lurid mythological interpretation.
Exactly.
And then we shift, abruptly, from explicit sexual lore to high-level cultural trivia with Memory Lane music.
Lois and Clark. This is the ultimate example of Big Fatty's deep, specific knowledge base.
The hint he provides is underpants on the outside, which leads to the theme from Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman.
And he provides detailed cast trivia to prove his commitment to pop culture history.
Dean Cain as Superman Clark Kent. Terry Hatcher as Lois Lane and John Shea as Lex Luthor. He just rattles off these facts like a certified expert.
And here's where the lore gets intensely personal and regional, the UGA connection.
He ties the cast trivia to the belief that Dean Cain went to the University of Georgia at the same time as Larry Cly, his movie-going partner.
For Master of Fine Arts degrees.
This is deeply specific, potentially unverified personal history just woven into the show's structure. He even urges listeners to ask Larry Cly if he knows Dean Cain.
He makes the verification of the trivia an interactive community project.
Blending his personal life with celebrity history, this is the ultimate Big Fatty trivia. Hyper-specific, regional, and personally connected.
And finally, the week wraps up with an absolutely fantastic, chaotic segment, the worst traffic excuses.
Big Fatty reads a list of excuses people have used to try to get out of tickets, and it offers this comedic counterpoint to his own meticulously planned life.
These excuses are pure content gold. They just demonstrate the absurdity of real life compared to his own carefully constructed chaos.
The examples are incredible. The 90% works story about being late picking up a daughter.
The female thing, where a woman going 90 miles per hour just points to a box of tampons in the backseat.
The old car trick, where the speedometer only goes to 75. The sheer range of human desperation is on display.
He spends time on the specific details of human vulnerability.
Mm.
And the excuse that is self-referential, the one he notes, sounds like Big Fatty.
Is the one about eating M&Ms and spilling them, which leads to accidental speeding.
It connects directly back to his original chaotic state for the week. the food-related physical distress, the taco salad gas.
He identifies with the low-stakes, accidental, food-related chaos that temporarily derails logical adult behavior. It's a moment of final, relatable absurdity before he embarks on his first-class journey.
And with that, we have reached the end of this week's deep dive into the archives.
This week's theme was just a brilliant study in contradictions.
100%. The ultimate juxtaposition of explicit self-absorption, the taco salad gas, turkey slapping, the new landing strip beard.
All balanced against this meticulous logistical planning for first-class travel, his commitment to television trivia, and his rigorous content structure.
The core lesson here is structure as permission. Big Fatty uses the rigid, consistent structure of his daily show, his long-term countdowns, and his meticulous documentation.
The flight numbers, the food orders, the specific beard style.
To create this reliable container. And that container then licenses him to share the most unfiltered, chaotic, and often embarrassing details of his life.
The chaos is engaging because the framework is so dependable.
It's about building intimacy through data points.
Yeah.
He trusts you with the highly mundane and the intensely explicit.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Big Fatty meticulously shared every logistical detail of his life, from his food consumption to his laundry, his flight path, the decision not to take his specialized gear all to build this incredible intimacy with his audience.
So we want to challenge you.
What mundane domestic detail in your life could you weaponize for honest connection? What specific embarrassing ritual could become the structural foundation of your own narrative?
Just like fiber chatting yourself and memory lane music are for BFO.
It's a fascinating thought experiment in vulnerability and authenticity.
It is. And crucially, tune in next weekend for the newest episode of Ruination, The Early Years.
I'm King.
I'm Gail.
Well, we hope you enjoyed today's trip down memory lane on Ruination, The Early Years. Join us again next weekend. We'll see you then.